2050. Der Future Podcast mit Markus Nettelbeck.
Welcome to another episode of 2050, the Future Podcast. Using wind as a source of power is a very old technology. Today we will talk about the future of wind power. My guest, Dr. Simon Thibolde, is a specialist in this area. He is senior engineer at Bachmann Monitoring, a company specialized on surveying wind turbine operations in real time. Welcome, Simon. Tell us a little bit more about you. Who are you and what are you doing?
Yeah, thank you, Markus, for having me. I'm Simon, and I was born in Asmara, Eritrea, a small country in East Africa. My background, I'm a civil engineer, and I first came to Germany to do my master's study on the AID scholarship. End of last year, I finished my dissertation on the topic using of the structural health monitoring for life cycle management and risk-based inspection planning of offshore wind turbines. This means that to utilize the monitoring results to help decision-making of the wind turbines for operation and maintenance cases.
Congratulations to that one.
Yeah, thank you.
What made you excited about wind energy in the past?
Yeah, I first was introduced into wind energy in my first job in Germany at Airwerk GmbH. And for the past 9 years, I have been working in the wind energy sector. And what made me like really interested into or excited about wind energy is that the idea that I'm playing a role in leaving behind a better world for the future generation. Because at some point, it's very obvious that due to the pollution happening from the fossil-based energy resources, at some point, the Earth will be inhabitable. Therefore, the human beings, we don't have any other choice rather than to find for some alternative energy sources. Being part of this makes me very excited.
This is a very good reason to start with these studies, and I think renewable energies like wind power are the right way forward to save our planet, hopefully.
Yeah, okay. That's correct. And also one thing is also, for example, in relation to my research also, like people will never change from the non-renewable to renewable energy sources because of the worry about the future of the generations. But the most important thing is that the renewable energy sources, including the wind, they need to be competitive in cost and reliability with the other energy sources. Therefore, when we achieve the competitiveness in cost and reliability, then of course people will be ready to change into the renewable energy sources. Therefore, this makes me like really excited. Okay. To contribute into such direction.
That's a good reason to go into that one. I agree. Before we start talking about the reasons why people are moving maybe towards renewable energies, can you tell us a little bit more how everything has started with wind energy and harvesting power from wind?
Of course, it really started a very, very long time ago. According to historians, for example, the first wind turbines were windmills, and according to some reference or like historical events, as early as around 1700 BC, windmills has been used in Mesopotamia. Mm-hmm. It's the like modern countries like Iraq, Kuwait, Turkey, and Syria. It was being used for irrigation purposes. They were harnessing the power of the wind to irrigate their plantations, because basically, this area was between the rivers of the Tigris and the Euphrates. Therefore, they were harnessing. And of course, in other parts of the world also, windmills, they have been used for grinding the grains and also for drainage as well, especially in Holland also for drainage. So in other part of the world as well, it has been used for such purposes. And in the modern world, like the first ever wind turbine to produce electricity was in Scotland. It was around 1887 by a professor called Professor Blyth. And In his cottage, he made a wind turbine, which was lighting the light bulb in his cottage. And one funny fact was that he offered the town where he was living to use the excessive electricity that he generated to light the street bulbs, and they refused it because they thought that electricity is like work of a devil.
That's the devil inside.
Yeah. So then after that, after 2 years also in USA, another person called Charles Brush also, he made a wind turbine to produce electricity also. But the major progress or the direction towards the modern wind turbine was done by Professor Lacour, a Danish professor. So this gave like the main direction towards the modern wind turbine. But also, after the end of the First World War also, people, they were like making weapons, and they come to know, they come to have some idea about the aerodynamics of the different shape of the weapons. Then they used this one also for the development of the wind turbines as well. Therefore, after the end of the First World War, the modern wind turbines developed like significantly. And in 1920, for example, the Betz law, that what is the maximum power that can be extracted from the wind was come to be found, or like with experiment proved. Therefore, wind turbines developed like this. And of course, in 1980s, for example, when we compare, when we jump, go forward to 1980s, the wind turbines at that time, they had like 15 meter diameter of the rotor, like the rotating area, and they had a capacity of like 0.01 megawatt. When we compare these ones with the current wind turbines, they are having a capacity of like around 1,500 times.
Wow, it's amazing.
The wind turbines in 1980s. So maybe we can summarize the history of the wind turbine that way. Even also in 2015, for example, the most popular wind turbines, they were of capacity 3.6 and 5 megawatt. Now we are having wind turbines with 15 megawatt capacity, which are being tested now for before commercial deployment. Therefore, we can see also like within 7 years, we are having like three times more capacity wind turbines.
So if you're talking about megawatts and the efficiency and the power we could get out of these wind turbines, how do you compare that? So these are huge numbers, I see that. And we see that there's a huge development in having the first ones with 0.something to 15
megawatts.
Right, megawatts. What does that mean, 15 megawatts?
Yeah, for example,
how many Christmas trees can we light up with 15 megawatts?
Yeah, that's a good question. For example, when we think of this one, like for example, in Germany, a family or household of three persons in a household, they have an estimated annual electricity consumption of like 3,500 kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when we compare, for example, when we talk about this 15 megawatt wind turbine, it has a capacity of like generating about 80 gigawatt hour energy for annually. So when we divide this 80 gigawatt hour by this 3,500 kilowatt hour, then I think this can cover the energy demand of around, so this will be around 20,000 families.
Wow, 20,000?
20,000 families?
Yeah.
Like this single wind turbine.
It's a small town then?
Yeah, so we can say that a 1 megawatt winter, 1 megawatt will be covering like, for example, around 1,500 families. Therefore, I think maybe this might be a good way of like giving comparative use of the megawatt in terms of like how much consumption families can do. So a single wind turbine with 15 megawatt capacity can cover the electricity demand of like 20,000 families.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is really amazing. How many people can live with this energy from one wind turbine now?
Yeah.
So you already mentioned it has started in Mesopotamia, and it went to Scotland to make the first electric power out of it. Yeah. So if you compare the different countries, so which country do you think is best in class using wind power today?
So far, as of this year, China is the country which is having the highest installed capacity wind turbine, like combined for onshore and offshore as well, and followed by US and also Germany in the third place. And for example, last year, 2021, from the global installed capacity of the wind energy, 50% was built in China.
This is a little bit unexpected if we talk about China. So everybody thinks, okay, they are polluting the world with coal and power plants and something like that, and so they are the strongest contributor in using wind energy already. So are we exporting technology to them, or are they doing producing their own wind turbines, or are they, I think they don't produce too much wind energy, so they use it, they consume their own energy, right?
Yeah, they consume their own energy. Maybe I think the idea, the reason they might be more pushing towards this renewable energy sources might be they have already seen the side effect of this pollution firsthand. Therefore, this might have shaped the policy of the government in pushing into renewable energy sources. Like since 2010, they have been every year the first country in the world with highest installed capacity.
And they are continuing building new wind farms, or are they done? Are they developing some areas to have more wind farms, or are they refurbishing their existing wind turbines to become more efficient? Do you know that?
About this one, I don't have much information, but generally, what I know is they have their own wind turbines, which are competitive. For example, I was reading last year, they developed a 10 megawatt wind turbine. So basically, with the already existing European wind turbines also, it's relatively competent also. They are mainly, earlier they were mainly concentrating on the onshore wind turbines, but since the last 2 years, I think they are also pushing more into the offshore wind turbines as well.
Yeah. And it's very obvious, but so wind energy has, of course, the potential to solve our current challenges in energy and supply chain and supply. Do you think we are quick enough to bring more innovations in the market to cope with this current, let's say, lack of energy, of gas, for example?
Yeah, I can say we are on the right track, I would say. Maybe the question I can answer in two parts. One is the current challenges, and the second part can be the environmental friendly efforts. For example, I always prefer to talk in numbers.
That's because perfectly okay.
Because then it's easier to relate into our daily life scenarios. For example, when we talk about the current challenges, the example we saw, this 15 megawatt wind turbine. I just got an email today, notification, a newsletter from Senvion, that this 15 megawatt wind turbine is already installed in a test experimental case. So the wind turbine is installed and it's being tested before it's certified for commercial deployment. And I got today a newsletter that the wind turbine started operating. It has its first kilowatt hour produced. Mm-hmm. So
that was today?
That was today,
oh,
yeah. Today, today morning I got this newsletter. It's a good coincidence.
All right.
So this 15 megawatt wind turbine, as already discussed, it can make 80 gigawatt hour per year, which can cover 20,000 families. Therefore, now after this is tested, it's already getting many demands from different offshore wind turbines operators that would like to use this wind turbine. Therefore, when it's like approved and it's used, imagine for example, it also will contribute to reduced cost of the energy, because if we compare this one with 2015, in 2015 we had like wind turbines of capacity 5 megawatt or 3.6 megawatt. Now, instead of like 3 wind turbines, we are having like one bigger wind turbine. Yeah. So we are reducing the cost for the foundation, for the design, and for the maintenance and operation also.
Yeah.
So I think that like we are on the right track, like making more effective the production of the wind energy. Maybe to the second case also, the environmental friendliness with numbers also this one. For example, when we think of like 1 megawatt power to be produced from the fossil fuel-based sources, the amount of carbon mm-hmm. released to the environment will be around 3.3 million kilograms per year for 1 megawatt production.
Yeah.
Now, like when we are producing like a 15 megawatt wind turbine, so this means that 3.3 times 15, this will be equivalent to like 50 million kilograms of carbon dioxide are being saved with this single wind turbine of 15 megawatt. And maybe to have like more equivalence also, this 15 megawatt wind turbine is equivalent, for example, a standard passenger car releases annually around 5,000 kilograms of carbon to the atmosphere, a standard passenger car. Therefore, if we are able to run the electric cars like generated from wind turbines, this will be like equivalent to removing around 10,000 passenger cars from the road. Like the pollution made by 10,000 passenger cars will be taken care of by a single 15 megawatt wind turbine.
So there's a huge upside here.
Yeah.
So, but the downside is we need to have wind to operate the wind turbines, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, we need to have wind, and wind is like almost available all around the world. Not of course with the same intensity, but of course it's very obvious that wind is not the only solution for our renewable energy sources. We have also other sources like the solar, the hydro. For example, the Nordic countries, they have like many hydropower systems. Norway and Sweden, they are like really making a lot of renewable energy sources. And the good thing also about wind, at some point also when we think like wind is like one form of solar energy also, because like when wind is flowing, the flow of wind is due to pressure difference, and this pressure difference comes from temperature difference, and of course temperature difference comes from the sun. Therefore, and the thing also, like for example, when we see in winter time, we have higher wind speeds than in summertime. And of course, for the solar also, we have more solar energy in summer than the winter time. Therefore, wind and solar, they are complementary to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like together, they can give like a full solution.
Right. So they are adding up in efficiency in a way.
Yeah.
And we can say that wind power is a kind of indirect solar power then.
Yeah, yeah, we can say that.
In a,
yeah.
In a way, yeah. That's,
yeah.
That's right. But it's very interesting that you say that. And especially if you talk to people there, many people are a little bit scared that wind turbines are built in their neighborhood because of the noise. And they say, okay, the landscape is kind of polluted in a way. I think the last couple of years, and especially 2022, showed us, okay, maybe we have to make some compromises if we would like to have our energy in the houses. So maybe we need to accept that there's a wind turbine on the hill next to us. But hearing you and listening to you, I see that they are getting more efficient in a way. So even if we are, if we not have too much wind in our areas and on the land side, onshore, so if wind comes up, so the new wind turbines are more efficient even with less wind then as well. So does that mean we don't need to build up huge farms? We just need to build some more modern wind turbines there who can maybe serve the demand, or what do you say? So is that, can this take a little bit the worries from the neighbors, let's say it this way?
Yeah. Like when we say, for example, in terms of the efficiency, maybe like as an example, for example, the Siemens Gamesa and the Vestas, which are the main manufacturers, they have done many times without increasing the dimension of the wind turbines. They increased the power production by only optimization. Like, for example, what they do is they increase the efficiency of the generators, and also they redesign the gearbox, which amplifies the rotation of the blade into much higher rotations, and also digitalization also plays a very role of the control system. If the control system, like wind turbines are like smart structures somehow, like they have a controller which takes information from a wind vane and anemometer on top of the wind turbine. By taking this data, it orients the wind turbine always towards the wind, and also it shuts down when the wind speed is like higher than the allowed by the design, and also it starts when the wind is like enough. Therefore, one thing is that the huge wind turbines, like with more than 6 megawatt, they are only used offshore.
Yeah,
they are not designed for onshore. Like the offshore is preferred than the onshore because we have a better wind source with less turbulence, and also like it's remote from the population. Yeah. Because one of the major problems like the wind energy is facing on onshore cases is that the social acceptance.
Right.
Like people, they are not ready to make some compromise, like you said. Of course, increasing the efficiency is one thing for onshore wind turbines. But also I see that better solution would be like going offshore.
Mm-hmm. So I think it was in November I had the chance to fly to Great Britain from here. So there was in the Northern Sea. So there are already a lot of wind turbines there. So I was a little bit surprised. I know there's one wind farm there. But if you have a look out of the window on the plane, you see really, I would say, hundreds of wind turbines there, and for the ships, there are kind of streets within this wind farms. You said that, for example, Vestas, they are retrofitting their existing wind turbines to become more efficient after a while. So that means the structure is strong enough that maybe the gearbox can be changed or something like that within a lifetime. And then, of course, how long is the lifetime of the wind turbine?
Yeah, for a wind turbine, the lifetime is from 20 to 25 years. For offshore, most of the time, like 25 years. For onshore, around 20. So this is like determined by the fatigue of the steel. Yeah. So Vestas and Siemens Gamesa, without changing the height, the physical dimensions of the wind turbine, they were able to increase the power production by only changing the internal components, making them more efficient, and by developing like more the cooling system, for example, inside the nacelle of the wind turbine, like this rectangular box as the tower top is a nacelle which houses the generator. Of course, it's a bit warm, so playing with the cooling system, using like higher grade magnets, this all has contributed to higher power output without any change to the external physical structure. So the same wind turbine, the same wind speed, but higher output, higher power output with only changing, optimizing such things.
What about the infrastructure? So where the power comes to the shore, I think there are big cables there. So, and if we maybe double the efficiency of the wind turbines, so are the cables in the right dimension for that one to supply or to keep this, or to convey this power? So sometimes if you put too much power into a cable, it's getting hot, it burns or something like this.
Yeah, I think maybe I should clarify something. When I say that they modify the wind turbines, for example, what they did was like, when we take an example of Vestas, they have like one generation of wind turbine, which was, I think, around 8 megawatt capacity. Then this was already operating in some of the offshore wind farms. Then they optimized and increased the capacity into 9 megawatts. So they were not optimizing the already built wind turbine, but they were optimizing for the next generation of wind turbines. Mm-hmm. So the cable will be according to 9 megawatt, but not 8 megawatt.
Ah, okay. So
the retrofitting or is done only after the end of the lifetime of the wind turbine, usually. Right.
Okay. And in retrofitting the wind turbines, one thing is make them more efficient, getting more power out of it. And is there also a way to make them a little bit more smarter? So with electronic parts in a way, so that they communicate to each other, that they say, okay, there's something wrong with me. I go to kind of maintenance mode or something like that. Is there also something which helps the operating company to save some money and warning early enough engineers going on site doing repairs before it breaks?
Yeah, of course. That's also what I did for my research, actually. Also, that's what we are doing in Bachmann monitoring. We are like installing sensors on the wind turbines so that we do inspection. For example, earlier before having these monitoring systems, inspection was done like regularly, which is called like periodic inspection. So with such periodic inspection, it can happen that it might be too early or too late. Too early that like renting a vessel, especially for offshore, is like really expensive.
Yeah.
And also it might happen due to the weather conditions. It might take more time to like really find a time window to operate in this wind turbine. Therefore, too early might be you go offshore, you check the wind turbine, there is nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or too late can be the wind turbine might be already broken down. Therefore, with our monitoring systems, like we are able to know the condition of the wind turbine so that we can schedule inspection and maintenance when there is a need to. Not too early, not too late. And of course, this contributes also to increasing the reliability of the wind turbines, because then we will have like a wind turbine which is operating as much as possible. And also the second advantage is that this will reduce the overall cost of the wind energy. Then at some point, we will have energy produced by wind turbines which is competent with the non-renewable energy sources. So, yeah, that's what we are doing at Bachmann.
Right. So you're contributing with your technology, let's say, features to a wind turbine which helps the operation companies saving cost. And this could be of benefit of all of us.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Nachgefragt.
In our Q&A section, former guests and listeners have the chance to ask their questions to my current guest, Dr. Alexander Schlüter, was my guest in episode number 31, The Energy System of the Future. And he's wondering from time to time he spotted wind turbines of lower heights. And he's wondering if he will see much more smaller wind turbines in urban environments and regions, for example, on the higher buildings.
Yeah, this can be like from personal observation. Like one thing is for sure, like wind turbines, they are more effective or they produce more power the bigger they get and the taller they get. Because, for example, if we are able to, like the higher we go, the wind speed also increases. If we are able to double the wind speed by going higher or building a wind turbine in more windy location, then we can increase the power output by 8 times. So doubling the wind gives 8 times output, and using like more rotor diameter, like doubling the diameter or the area, gives like 4 times power output. So the wind turbines which are getting smaller might be due to local restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
For example, yeah, of course, in some areas they might not allow like taller wind turbines due to an airport being nearby, and also due to the noise, because the bigger the wind turbine, then there might be some side effects from the flickering effect, like when the sun rays pass through the blades, then they might have the effect of like turning on and off the light. So the bigger the wind turbine, then the bigger will be the effect also. So I think that such this might be not related to the power output, but mainly to local restrictions.
Okay. Are there some initiatives to make wind turbines a little bit less noisy, even if they are big?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. For example, bigger wind turbines, they are less noisy. And the reason is that the bigger a wind turbine, then the less is the rotation.
Okay.
It goes like slowly.
It's like with the fans. Huh?
Yeah,
so the smaller the
smaller,
fan, the more noise.
The faster.
Yeah.
The more the noise.
Yeah.
Like the bigger wind turbines, they move like slowly. But of course, they have more torque to rotate the generator and produce more higher output also.
Yeah. There's another question from a listener.
Hello, Simon. My name is Peter. And I'm really happy that you are sharing this insight about wind energy with us. And I have a question. When do you think wind energy has reached a state where it can be used, like, for example, a balcony solar power station within private properties? Thank you for answering this question.
That was Peter Krause.
Yeah, good. Thank you, Peter, for asking this question. Yeah. Currently, the wind turbines, they are not like the solar, because when we use solar panel, for example, it doesn't have any effect on the structure. But when we like add a wind turbine into a structure, then there might be some side effects, like one of them, like a vibration, because we are having like rotating parts, which can initiate, especially in the worst case, for example, when the frequency of the wind turbine coincides with the frequency or the natural frequency or eigenfrequency of the structure, then it can result in resonance, like what we are having sometimes with a washing machine, this amplification of the vibration.
Yeah.
Therefore, I think that we will have like small wind turbines integrated into built structures when they are planned from the very beginning of the design of the house, because then all the vibration effects and all the noise effects, all of such things, they will be considered during the design stage. Then these effects will be to the minimum or of not any inconvenience to the resident. Therefore, I know that some buildings also they are done with wind turbines in Dubai and in London also. But they were planned from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I think that we will achieve this one once architects incorporate such structures into their original, from the very beginning of the design of the structures, then all the side effects will be taken care of as a design stage.
Yeah, that makes sense, of course, the vibrations and the effect on the structure then. What about vertical wind turbines? So from time to time we see these ones. So because they don't take so much, they don't have this diameter of 50 meters or larger or whatever.
Yeah.
So is that possible to have more of these smaller wind turbines integrated into new architecture?
Yeah, usually most of the small wind turbines, they are vertical axis wind turbines.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have also seen some wind turbines. Most of them, they are like vertical axis. But some research showed that the horizontal axis wind turbines, they are more effective than the vertical axis, because horizontal axis wind turbines is that we are having a pole.
Yeah.
Like when we put this one, we are having a pole, and at the top we are having this rotating part. But with vertical axis, we are having the rotating part also from the lower, so it takes more space. And generally, some studies showed that the horizontal axis, they are like more effective than the vertical axis wind turbines.
Yeah.
That might be the reason that, for example, this huge wind turbine, we don't have any of these huge wind turbines as a vertical axis. All of them, which are used in offshore and large scale, they are all horizontal axis wind turbines.
There must be a reason for that somehow. But if both of the questions are asking for more wind turbines in residential areas. Yeah. So I think it could be a kind of addition to all the solar panels we have on the roofs already. So maybe we have some vertical wind turbines to get a kind of compromise even if they are not that efficient than a horizontal one. But in some cases, it's not possible to install horizontal wind turbines because of neighbors or something like that. Quite interesting. So if you look a little bit more into the future, so we had some podcasts already where we talked about renewables and where we can get some energy from. And so, of course, solar power was one of the most mentioned technology. And so we had some podcasts related to mobility as well. And if we have a look to all the streets in Deutschland, in Germany, our Autobahn. Yeah. So there are a lot of streets there. And so one of the idea was to use the streets, the surface of the streets, to collect the solar power. So why not? Because there are cars running in one direction, cars running into another direction. So why not using the wind power of the cars passing by for the future?
Yeah, of course. I think already many people has come with this idea, and it like really makes sense also, this one, to use the wind, especially the vertical axis would be ideal, I would say, in such case, because then when the cars are like passing at high speed, then I think it will be work more with vertical axis, I would say. Yeah, why not? In combination also, like we said, like in we are having the wind when the cars are like passing by, so we are not depending on the wind speed but on the cars passing by.
Yeah.
And in combination with the solar, I think it can be the future. Like autobahns will not be only roads but also energy generators as well.
Right. That works, of course, not in areas like we live currently in the Ruhrgebiet, where we have a lot of traffic jams. So but but maybe there are a lot of other kilometers of autobahn where it could work.
Yeah.
What is your vision of wind energy in 2050?
Yeah, in 2050, I think I say that in 2050 we will have a complete transfer from the non-renewable to the renewable energy sources. And of course, wind will be playing a major role, like from the trend that we see so far. For example, in 2005, for example, wind was, by its production or by its capacity, it was like behind the major energy sources, like the natural gas, the coal, fuel, nuclear, and other. But in the last 15 years, it has overtaken all of the energy sources, and now it's second to natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
So I am optimistic that by 2050, we will be shifting to the renewable energy sources, and wind will play a very significant role.
How do we cope with the wind? So sometimes we have wind, in some areas we have more wind, and sometimes we don't have any wind. Is there a kind of load balancing so we can match that? So if we see, okay, we have offshore a lot of wind now and onshore there's nothing, so we need to match that in an intelligent way to cover the permanent need. So this is what you hear if you discuss about wind energy. So they say, okay, it's nice, it's good, but we need to have wind.
And of course, for example, it's a good question actually. We are having sometimes wind, sometimes too much, and sometimes also too less. And already some activities are being done on using the surplus wind being produced. For example, we are talking about these 15 megawatt wind turbines, for example. It might happen that we are having sometimes too much extra produced power, from the dams. This extra, at some point, they have been using it to take water from downstream to upstream, also the surplus. But I am very optimistic. Now there is also a system, these electrolyzers are being installed in these huge wind turbines. And this, what they do is, they extract hydrogen from the seawater. So the surplus produced electricity is stored as hydrogen. Then this hydrogen can be used for electric cars, for example.
Yeah, As a buffer somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had that already with solar power. So when we said, okay, let's get to the deserts and collect all the sun there. And then was the question, okay, what do we do then? So we need very long cables.
Yeah.
Or maybe we have to do that on the seaside. But the question is, how can we have technology being capable to make hydrogen out of seawater?
Yeah, so this hydrogen also, which is produced from renewable energy sources, it's called like green hydrogen also.
Yes.
So this is like one of the ideas. Then we can cover the gap when we are not having wind.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, for example, in Denmark, they are already planning to have energy islands, like huge artificial islands,
mm-hmm.
with wind turbines and solar panels, so that these energy islands, they will be converting all the produced energy into liquid hydrogen, which can be used also by aeroplanes, by ships, and also exported to be used by electric cars also. So the cars, they can use it like combustion, like standard fuel, or also by directly changing to water and making electricity on the way also.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think will the communication between all these different energy sources work in the future? So if we look at our homes, we have these smart homes and we try to be as smart as possible, connecting things via the internet, IoT as a buzzword here. How will all these technologies and all these sources communicate with each other in the future?
Yeah, like, for example, when we go back a little bit, when we had these windmills, there was always one person, miller, like standing there and orienting the wind to the wind direction, to the windmill. Then we had these feathers to automatically orient the wind turbine. Then we have the controller. Now wind turbines are smart structures. They can decide when to operate, when to stop, and to slow down also, like by changing the lift forces into the drag forces. And now, for example, Bahman, we are doing like automation. And now also, you know, the field of this artificial intelligence is like really progressing. So I am sure that this will use in a very effective communication of the wind turbines. For example, a wind turbine without any external supervision will be able to communicate, for example, when to feed into the grid and when to change into hydrogen. And also to communicate with the other wind turbines, because usually when we are having a wind farm, all the energy produced by the wind turbines, it's collected into an offshore substation.
Mm-hmm.
In offshore wind turbines, then from this offshore substation, it's transported to onshore. So with this automation, rather than sending to the offshore substation, each wind turbine will be having its own electrolyzer, so that this automation and communication with each other will be much more effective. And of course, this will result in more reliable energy production by wind turbines also.
Right. Do you think that these wind turbines, okay, quite interesting aspect is that hydrogen will be produced if you have this surplus of energy. But do you think there will be in 30 years around a kind of artificial intelligence seeing, okay, we have so much energy here, so we have a lack of energy there, so and we can have a kind of transfer of energy from one country to another country somehow, and having all the logistics aligned to each other to be more efficient?
Yeah, for example, as an example, I was mentioning this energy island.
Hmm?
Denmark is planning energy island, to produce energy island, I think, by 2030 something.
Yeah.
And already Holland, Netherlands, already they decided to connect their grid into this energy island.
Yeah.
So not only like for every country, but I think at some point, due to this automation, due to this communication, not only within one country, but also like the many countries, they will be combining their resources and sharing with each other the extra energy they are having or the deficiency of energy they are having. For example, in the Nordic countries, they are having like mainly from hydropower, and Germany from the wind and other sources. So at some point, this communication also will make the cooperation of the different countries, and also like countries which are having like South Europe or African countries in the desert also. At some point, with development of the communication, the whole world might be able to communicate in real time and make the best of the produced energy.
So, you know, I have a hospitality background in a way, and yield management is one of the topics there. So that means, of course, you are paying more for a hotel room when there is a trade fair in town or something like that, or less if everybody's out for vacation or something like this. And having a strong calculator in mind who sees, okay, I have a real-time overview of all available energy sources, and I have a forecast. So maybe learning also from the past and seeing and getting some information about the future, which are maybe not yet predictable, but some people can put them in, so that we see if there is a huge consumption need in the forecast somehow. But we also see maybe the weather conditions on the other hand, and see, okay, we will get a kind of, let's say, storm in the northern sea, which is capable to power the wind turbines a lot, so that we can maybe keep the coal energy on a lower base, on a lower level, and already make sure that the power coming from the storm in the North Sea will generate the energy which is needed in this country, which would normally use the coal to power the regular demand. So is that thinkable this way?
Of course. Yeah, it's like at the end of the day, yeah, always like the cost also is determined by the demand and supply.
Yeah.
Like when there is like really a lot of supply, then the cost will go down. And when there is no, like when there is like really no wind, then of course the change will be like, it's like the stock market somehow.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's like this already with the energy, right?
Yeah, it's already
they are
like
trading.
So this trading will be like really more effective with this development in communication, especially in real time, and like more reliable forecasts also.
Mm-hmm.
Like models that are already existing models, like we are now told, okay, tomorrow it will be raining. And also the same also for the wind, and if the sun will be shining, and also for different storms or other things. But of course, storms are not always like producing wind. Also, sometimes they might result in shutting down of the wind turbine, because like wind turbines, usually when the wind speed, like for the bigger wind turbines, the shutdown wind speed is around 30 meters per second.
Mm-hmm.
When 30 meters per second is reached for like really huge wind turbines, then the wind turbine will be shutting down because it's not structurally safe also to operate. So a storm might not always result in energy generation. It might sometimes also result in absence of energy production by the wind turbine as well.
Right. Then we need to take the power from other wind turbines in other regions, or maybe from solar power or something like that.
Yeah, from other source or from hydro. Yeah. So at the end of the day, like the communication is like really very important aspect. And I'm optimistic this artificial intelligence will also really help the communication in real time and learning. Like always in nature, things are like cyclic, like predictable. So that's why we are having reliable weather forecasts and other things, and with satellites and every observation. So this communication will help all the renewable energy sources to cooperate with each other, to have enough backup storage in a form of hydrogen and other forms also for more reliable. The most important thing is like reliability is also important. Like for example, if I am like relying on a wind turbine, which is not like sometimes if I am to have a blackout, then no one will shift to that. So the most important thing is having a reliable energy sources, and of course at the same time also like cheaper, which is cheaper than the already existing non-renewable energy sources. So reliability and cost determine or help to decide the people. These two things will determine whether we are able or we are capable of completely shifting to the renewable energy sources from the non-renewable energy sources. And this depends on the cooperation, working together of the different forms of the renewable energy sources through communication with each other and filling the gap between each other.
Right. So we are approaching slowly the end of our podcast. So do you have a message for our audience?
Yeah. Yeah, generally, like, of course, I might be a bit biased at this point in time, but I'm like really very optimistic that, yeah, like we should all think, of course, like at some point, like we received the Earth like habitable. So we should all like somehow feel responsible also to leave a better world for the future generations, because what we do now determines the future. So when we start doing things right now, then the future will be better. But when we continue doing things in the wrong direction, then the future will not be good for the future generations. Therefore, I motivate like everyone to educate or to like read the actual scientific facts rather than relying on non-scientific like discussions or comments about the wind turbines and about the renewable energy sources. For sure, the wind energy, the solar and the others, they need some time. Like we can say relatively, it's a young industry, but always getting better. And of course, it's acceptable that they have like some side effects and even to the environment at this point in time. But the more we work, the more we support this, then the better it will go until it's matured and it can completely replace the non-renewable energy sources so that the future can be better for our children and grandchildren.
Oh, thank you very much, Simon. I take your message as my closing words as well then.
Thank you, Marcus.
It was great to have you as a guest in my show today. A big thanks also to all the listeners. My guest today was Dr. Simon Tewolde. My name is Marcus Nettelbeck. Stay healthy and curious.